Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Beau Bernard, the executive director of the International Gaming Institute at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, about the recently concluded UNR-UNLV Executive Development Program. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series, raising the bar on cutting-edge information in the gaming industry. To know more about the series, visit unlvghes.com. Beau Bernard has been the executive director of the International Gaming Institute at UNLV since 2011. He is also the chairman of the UNR-UNLV Executive Development Program, held for 10 days each November in Lake Tahoe. He talks about the recently completed program, the IGI Innovation Lab, which encourages students to invent new games and products for the gaming industry, as well as other issues related to the International Gaming Institute. He spoke with me at his offices in the Stan Fulton Building at UNLV in December. It's the hardest thing. Bernard, thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. It's great to be with you. We just saw each other a few weeks ago up in Northern Nevada at the Executive Development Program, and I was just so blown away by that. I've known so many executives who have gone through that program, you know, when Dr. Eddington was running it, and now when you're running it, it's just been a great program. So you said it was your favorite event of the year during the welcome ceremony. Well, why is that?
Yeah, well, part of it was that Roger Gross opened it with us. So thank you, Roger,
for
coming up. As I think you know, and this was, I want to obviously speak to the reach and scope and the growth of what you've been able to do. Historically, we've had sort of a state of the industry on that opening day, and we've had folks like Jeff Freeman come in and give that sort of global perspective. And so you were a perfect opening. So our gratitude is directed at you. And it is just a really special program. Bill Eddington started it in 1990. And to give you a sense, they had, I think I saw the list of attendees that year, and it was, there were like 14 attendees.
Right.
We had upwards of 60 this year. But back on that original one in 1990, a young Andrew McDonald sat in the front row next to a young Mark Liparelli, one of whom was going on to become the chief casino officer of what I think is the most spectacular and great resort in the world in Marina Bay Sands. One of them was going to become the chair of the Nevada Gaming Control Board and a leader on the manufacturing side, and Mark Liparelli. Two of them didn't know each other, became good buddies, and now over the past almost 30 years have had that network.
Right.
And that plays out exponentially.
Sure,
it plays out all over the place. So one of the neat things in the weeks after our executive development program is these 60 people from all over the world stay in touch. And every year's graduating class sends little notes out, like the ones I got just this week, past week, where the gentleman who just got promoted to general manager of the Star in Sydney is a guy who was in our class that you met here a couple weeks ago, and he was going up for that position, and he got it, and everybody else is rooting for him.
Yeah.
And so it just builds this family that Bill started, where you have suddenly friends from all over the world, and by virtue of spending 9 very intense days up in Lake Tahoe, the running joke is it's the most gorgeous place in the world that you'd never get to see, because they're working hard 8 to 5, lectures from the likes of Roger Gross and brilliant luminaries from across the industry and outside of the industry too. And then at night, they go into their work caves and work on this really, really difficult team competition that brings together a team that, for example, you might be sitting at a table next to a South African regulator, next to an Australian slot manager, next to a Macau casino marketing executive, next to the Alberta Gaming and Liquor Commission head, and all of you have to work together with a group you've never met before, but suddenly becomes part of your family to build something spectacular and to do something impressive. So it's neat. It's our big marquee event. It's the one that we only lean on the likes of Roger Gross once a year. A lot of our faculty are like that. We'll ask you to do one thing a year here at the university, and that's that thing. That is our marquee thing. So it's a lot of fun, and again, the connections you make with industry around the world are just invaluable. And I always think back, you and I have talked about this, I come from a family in this industry. My great-great-grandfather came out here because he kept getting thrown in jails for dealing in casinos in the Midwest.
Right.
Out here, he was able to do that. But he, in a million years, wouldn't have imagined that this would be an industry where you can take a class in a program where you sit next to a South African and you sit next to an Australian. Right. I mean, in a million years, he wouldn't have guessed that those things would exist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we were just talking about the last time we did a podcast, and it was with Dr. Eddington when he was sick and he was handing the EDB program off to you. Yeah. And so what does it mean for you to take that over, something that he structured and nourished and loved for his whole career?
I, for years, was very lucky to be asked to just be on the faculty, so mm-hmm. I'd come out and speak for an hour and a half, and I was just always stunned at the quality in that room, and I always learned way more than I felt I taught. And so when Bill gave me that call, I remember where I was on the road and seeing his name pop up on my screen in my car and getting all excited, and then, of course, hearing the very difficult news that we all heard then about his health, but wrapped up, as it always was, with a teaching lesson mm-hmm. where he said, I would like for you to take this over. And I just thought, well, I'm clearly not qualified for that. And I was overwhelmed. And that first year, we sort of did it together, and he delivered his final lecture in a chair. You can find it online. It's very Googleable, but in this great throne. Mm-hmm. And that was really all he could do at that point. And so, you know, it was a very emotional year the following year, right? And we, frankly, you know, again, we weren't sure what we were doing because Bill knew how to do everything. He was this giant, literally, right? He was this big guy with big shoulders who just, you know, knew how to tackle big projects like that. And, you know, as a teacher, you try to project all the confidence in the world. But it can be an insecure thing to stand up in front of future CEOs and current CEOs. I mean, the folks there are all leaders in this industry. But once more, I think we embrace the final slide that we show on the first morning is a picture of him just erupting in laughter in front of a big wall of books behind him. Right. That's a perfect Bill photo. Because the reminder is, enjoy this, right? You have a chance to come up here and get better. Enjoy it, right? Sure. Just embrace it. Run with it. If you're the kind of person, and I was like this as a student who sits in the back and is kind of quiet and unsure whether you have anything to say, not this week. You know, this week we want you to jump in with that pointing to him up on the screen, that face, that enjoyment, that pure joy. And that was the way he felt about this program. It was very much his baby. It still is his baby. And he ends up working his way into virtually every lecture and certainly every day.
Sure.
And we're just very, very humbled and proud to be a part of it. It really is something that's taken on a life of its own and that we all just sort of get to jump on and ride. It's not anybody's thing except for Bill's. And he's built something that's absolutely beautiful and global. I think we now have 1,500 alums, and mm-hmm. it's more, pretty much every property in the world boasts an EDP exec.
Sure, yeah, no question. So one of the things I was always impressed with is what you just said, is that the people who were there really participated. You, during your first lecture, opening the day on Saturday there, you know, people were jumping in at all points and giving their opinions and asking you questions, and it just seemed like a lot of feedback between you and them, and then between them and their colleagues.
Yeah, I love that. And as a teacher, you learn little tricks of the trade, and the key is to say that early on. Look, here are the rules. Mm-hmm. Jump in, because once more, this is your education. Make it yours, mm-hmm. and make sure that the information being given from the front of the room is relevant to your world. It might well be that with a question, we can go down a really productive direction. And so, yeah, we've said from the outset, one of the things we emphasize, is, as I said, is, you know, you might not be the kind of person who raises his or her hand very often. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of exercises, a ton of role plays, a ton of scenarios, very active participation projects. And we always say, you might be the kind of person who never raises his or her hand at the moment when somebody's, all right, we need two volunteers to come up here on stage. Right. We're going to act out an HR challenge in a really difficult scenario that's from the real world. And by the way, the faculty member who is presenting this is the one who went through this in the real world. Who wants to volunteer? Well, that can be really daunting. Mm-hmm. But we always say, not this week, right? Jump in this week. Own this. Make it yours. And they run with it. Now, once more, it's relatively easy because now, you know, we're very fortunate in that each of these properties send their next great leader. Right. And so every year they sort of, you know, there's that coveted slot at the executive development program and we get a great pool. But yeah, the spirit of the room is one as you saw, that's very participatory. And you really get to know folks. It's amazing. In a room full of 60 people by the end, in our party that closes the thing where we announce the winner of the team competition, it's amazing how close they've gotten over the course of those 10 days.
So how do you, you mentioned you had 60 participants, more or less. How do you get to participate in this? Do you have to go through your company?
This is a fully joint project with the University of Nevada, Reno. So our two gaming programs work hand in hand. And there is an application process. So you go to the Executive Development Program, which is, again, another very Googleable program in gaming. There are lots of these programs, that exist for business people more generally.
Right.
This is the one that is, you know, a 10-day intensive program in gaming. So if you Google that and you find that, you go and there's an application process. And we read those applications, you know, very, very closely. And once more, I think part of the nice thing about doing it for so long, this was our 28th year, is that I think the world has a pretty good sense of the kind of person who should go to this. We have a pretty good sense of the kind of person who will really benefit from it. And as a result, the admissions process is one that, while it's formal, is one that I think we've gotten pretty good at finding a good group, a good class every year that'll graduate at the end with, by the way, something that has the UNLV and the UNR stamp on it. And, you know, that doesn't exist a whole lot in Nevada, where we have, like many states, a little bit of a rivalry sometimes between the universities, but it is a true joint effort.
Yeah, great, great. Okay, let's move on. I want to talk about the Innovation Lab that you set up here a few years ago. I think it's under the direction of Mark Yaroslav, a semi-legendary gaming executive, gaming manufacturing executive.
And inventor himself.
Right. So tell me what the idea there was when you first put it together.
So the genesis, it's one of those lessons where, you know, take the meetings because you never know, right? And I got a call from Mark Yaroslav, and certainly you're going to take a meeting with him. But we went to lunch right across the street from where we are right now at Ferraro's, the great Italian restaurant across from the Hard Rock. And, you know, he was a guy who's invented several very successful table games, had a run as CEO of Shufflemaster, was COO of Coleco when Coleco did ColecoVision.
Right.
So talk about some of the things that you talk about every month in your issue.
Yeah.
He was thinking about this, you know, back when ColecoVision transformed the American living room. But at that lunch, he said, you know, this is a great line, I don't want to die with this knowledge, Bo.
Yeah.
I've invented a lot of games. I've overseen a company that's invented a lot of games. And there's no class on how to invent a gambling game.
Yeah.
And he, to his credit, had the vision that's we've really stayed true to this vision in the years since. He said, I don't want to have midterms. I don't want to have tests. I don't want to have papers. Here it is.
Yeah.
The final exam is invent a gambling game and unveil it in front of industry leaders, and it'll be, you know, kind of like Shark Tank. And so that's been exactly what it is now. And the nice thing about doing this within a university is, for example, we had a student who had to simulate for a sports betting game that came in, I think, second at the showcase a couple years ago, 15 million NFL seasons. Well, most of us don't have that computing power, right? And the UNLV computer science department didn't have that computing power even. So they went to Switch, which is the major data center south of town that has a supercomputer called Cherry Creek that all university students get to use free of charge. They sell it to the private sector, but you know, if you're a university student that can come up with a problem for it. And we've used that several times now. And once more, you know, the average inventor in his or her garage doesn't get to use that, right? And probably doesn't have access to PhD mathematicians like Mark Yaroslav. He's not only the former CEO of Shufflemaster. He got a PhD in math from Princeton when John Nash, the beautiful mind guy Russell Crowe played, was there. And so, you know, he knows, obviously, how to set in motion a supercomputer to figure out the math, right? And, you know, we just have had wonderful participation. I just went to lunch with a gentleman who's going to be there and is going to be one of our celebrity judges. It really has been, like I said, with the executive development program, one of those things that's taken on a life of its own. And now it's its own personality. The showcase every year is, I always say, it's like, you know, walking downstairs and opening your presents on Christmas Day or, you know, your holiday of choice. It is a day where these students unveil gambling games that are just completely creative.
Right.
And so that's this coming Wednesday night as you and I sit here, and it's one of my favorite days of the year.
Yeah. And the thing that I'm so impressed with is that the students who invent these games, they own them.
They do.
In a lot of colleges,
that's
you know, if you develop it under the auspices of a college owns it.
Yeah.
And not here. Why did you do that?
So Mark and I both were big believers in this. You know, you're here if you're a teacher. You're here for kids. It sounds cheesy, but that you know that's the reality, and hopefully in most educational settings. And so our thought was certainly, you know, in the same way that if you invent a plastic in a chemistry lab, the university paid for that lab, so the university's owed something. But in our case, you know, it's not as expensive to build a casino lab as it is to build this wet lab for a chemist. And so we thought we could come to a reasonable place where the student owns the vast, vast majority of it. And only the idea that they actually do in our lab is the idea that's subject to even the university getting some of it.
Sure.
So we were lucky in that these models exist for, like, chemistry departments and other universities.
Right.
We looked hard at that, and it's kind of just like EDP. You look very hard at, like, you know, CEO boot camps at Stanford Business School, and then you build something for gaming. We looked very hard at innovation centers, you know, like, once more, places that have been churning out plastics that you sell to Monsanto that then go into your trash bins, right? And these can be, you know, very lucrative for the inventors. I think, as you pointed out, one of the things that's special about us is usually this is done in a way where you have to hire a snooty professor who makes a gazillion dollars, and, you know, as a university, and they are the stars that invent the plastic.
Right.
In our case, these are kids. Right. These are the students.
Right.
The students are the inventors. And so it's really neat, especially at a moment, as you've written about quite a bit, where there's a little bit of debate over whether this next generation is going to gamble, right? And we can go on, there'll be a separate podcast, having that conversation. And if, you know, those who are listening to us read GGB over the last, like, 10 years, we've been talking more than that, talking about this. But at the very least, it's a neat thing to see the next generation saying, here's something I would play, right? So no matter where you fall on the great debate over millennials, right? I think all of us can arrive at the same place where we agree that's a good thing, where the next generation is saying, here's something that I would really love to play.
Right.
And you see it downstairs. There are some fun games that look very different from the games that my grandpa used to deal. And so, for example, last year we have Casino Dominoes, which now you can play on the plaza downtown. And Casino Dominoes, you know, Dominoes doesn't exist on a casino floor. How does Dominoes not exist on a casino floor when it is the game of Latin America?
Everybody understands what Dominoes is.
And everybody knows what it is. Right. And to invent a game that the math is right on, but that also is recognizably Dominoes, was a real accomplishment by a kid named Harold last year. And so he had an idea. I want to make the first Dominoes game. We, as a lab and as faculty, people like Mark Yoseloff, knew how to sort of make that dream a reality.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's been really rewarding. It's just a few years old. You know, didn't exist when you and I were talking last. Our last podcast, none of the stuff existed.
Right.
Actually,
yeah,
a lot of the stuff we're doing actually didn't exist, at least in this iteration. And it's just really taken off.
Right. And there's been a lot of instances, as with Casino Dominoes, where the student has sold his idea to some of the big games.
Yeah,
Konami played.
That's
bought a couple of things from.
Konami famously bought a woman's game that paid for her entire undergraduate education.
Right.
We have a number of games that are right now in the process of being sold, especially, again, some of the skill-based games. It's such an awkward name. I don't like the skill-based term. But, you know, the convergence of sort of, you know, video games and gambling, and that obviously another big challenge, a big debate that's going on. We have students selling those kinds of games to those companies. You know, I think we now have 7 games on floors. In just the few years we've done this, we've submitted 50 patent applications. We've gotten 12 gambling patents issued during a moment where a lot of smart folks think that gambling patents are going to are getting harder and harder and harder to get.
And they are. Yeah.
And so, you know, once more, these are the things that universities are so proud of. When a chemistry professor holds up a patent, that's something that all of the sciences celebrate. They shut the university down. We got 12 of those now.
Yeah.
And while an outsider, a snobby professor at another university, would probably say, oh, it's just gambling. It's like, well, let's explain what this industry is first off, and how big it is, and how global it is, and why shouldn't you have a lab that does this in a university in the 21st century?
Sure.
So, yeah, it's been neat.
Yeah, it's been a really exciting program, and I'm looking forward to seeing who wins on Wednesday.
We'll let you know.
Something.
Our sponsor this week is the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series, which was designed to change the way gaming seminars are conducted. No longer are talking heads spouting their expertise and the audience sleepily following along. UNLV GHES is provocative, compelling, and most of all, interactive. The audience gets the opportunity to challenge the speakers, asking questions, eliciting opinions. The speakers provide a sounding board, allowing their expertise to be examined and probed. Whether you attend in person at UNLV or join the live stream, the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series is special and leaves participants more educated and energized than any other gaming learning environment. To learn about the series, visit unlvghes.com, where you can sign up for the remaining session in 2018 on December 13th, or learn about the episodes planned in 2019, including the full-day session on February 21st, The Road to 2020. Now back to our interview.
Well, you just talked about millennials. Another effort that you guys have put forth is studying esports.
That's right.
And this is a new field that people don't really understand about. And you brought in a great guy in Robert Rippey to lead that program.
Yeah.
We have Brett Abarbanel, another one who knows a lot about esports.
Right. Yeah.
So you've got a great faculty there. And is this something that UNLV can really find a home and become the major esports university?
Well, I would hope so. In the end, I'm less concerned about whether we're branded in that way, as I'm concerned about, I want this building to be a place that tackles the big questions and issues of the day.
Right.
If we're not getting involved in those things, shame on us, right? And this is a building that you knew the founders very well, and that's what they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Was this building to be that? And clearly, once more, wherever you fall in the esports is the future, spectrum. I think we can all agree that it's definitely something we need to be looking at, right?
For sure.
And so I would add Jennifer Roberts to that list. She's the gaming law professor who's down the hall here and who is also working on this. But Dr. Brett Abarbanel. Really, anything new under the sun in gambling as it pertains to new technologies or new games, Brett immediately becomes the world's leading academic expert in that. He's just a dynamo. And Robert Rippey, it was a neat story. He was a guy who was an ex-Navy fighter pilot, mm-hmm. then was an executive with all of the major hospitality companies, you can name, Ritz-Carlton, Sheraton. Las Vegas Sands headhunted him, and he was in that role there. But he's somebody who everywhere he's gone, he's always enjoyed the local college campus. And when you're a military person and you're a hospitality person, you live in a lot of cities, right? And everywhere I went, he taught at the local university.
Yeah.
And so when we talked, and I remember that fateful lunch with, it seems like a lot of these things happened over lunch, the hummus had just come out. And we were at that point where the appetizer had just arrived, and he was on board. He said, you guys are going to look at esports. You're going to look at hospitality innovation, which grew out of the gaming innovation thing. Right. He's teaching classes where students are reinventing the hotel room in amazing ways. And so his heart was in this in a way that really works out well on our campus.
Right.
A lot of people, I would assume from the outside, would think that it's pretty easy to have an international gaming institute in Las Vegas at the university. And the truth is, it is, in the sense that there's so much expertise in this town, of course, as you know. But it's one thing to know a lot of stuff. It's quite another to get up in front of a room full of people and really be able to teach it, right? Those are sometimes two different skills.
Sure.
And one of the things we've learned is you really need to be both. You need to be somebody who knows a lot of stuff, but who also is able to communicate that stuff, usually in three or four different ways, right? In ways that beginners will understand, in ways that the leading C-level execs will understand, and all points in between. And those are the folks we've really enjoyed going after and hiring and that now work in this building.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about a program you just started recently called the S Program, which is a kind of an EDP for young kids.
EDP for kids.
underprivileged kids here in the Las Vegas community. It's a great outreach for the university. Tell us how that came about and how that's going.
So it really came about as we're a growing team now. I think once more, when you were here, this was a pretty empty building the last time you and I talked. And now we have 30 people who work here.
Yeah.
A lot of those are student researchers all the way up through folks who are maybe closer to the end of a long career and all points in between. And one of the things we do, obviously, is we get together and we start talking about what's next. And somebody had mentioned something to the effect of, EDP is just so special, and it's our favorite thing. And these people in the audience are all really impressive. These are all, SVP types and people who are going to be fine, right? Even if EDP went away, God forbid, they'd be in good shape. What if we could bring that to the next generation and to underprivileged neighborhoods and really start to change family trees? Wouldn't that be cool? And so somebody said, oh, that's like EDP for kids. And we said, yeah, what if we could do this? And we partnered with Core Academy, which works in, frankly, East Las Vegas. I can point to the house I grew up in from the public schools that we sit in. And that's obviously at a biographical level why it's neat for me.
Right,
I literally grew up a stone's throw from these kids' places. I've lived in these neighborhoods. And I remember thinking as a kid, and in fact, I started thinking about this the other day as we had the anniversary of the MGM fire. I remember, from anywhere in the valley, you can see the tall buildings. That was a day where the tall building went up in flames, and none of us who saw it will ever, ever forget it. But in seeing those tall buildings, they were kind of like, it was kind of like seeing the, I never put it this way, but the Wizard of Oz, where you see, at the end of the old brick road or winding away. But I never knew how to get there. Yeah. And even I had family that worked in those buildings, but I didn't know how you got to be an executive, how you got to be one of the graduates of EDP that runs these buildings. And so I said to these students every year now, we're going to show you how you can get there. We're going to show you and introduce you to some really special people. And I got to tell you, up and down the strip, throughout the manufacturing side of the industry, nobody's ever said no. When they say, you're going to show like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, you might be an engineer if you're a tinkerer. And if you're an engineer, here's a whole bunch of low-flung buildings back behind the airport that need engineers to build the next generation of all sorts of things, not just games, but also systems and all, And, we do the morning we spend on campus and we're in a classroom. But then in the afternoon, we go apply it. This is not some ivory tower exercise. We do what I think UNLV does best, which is we go out into our backyard. And in this case, these are all students who would be the first in their families to go to college. Of the first graduating class, all of them are going to college. 10 of them so far, we know, are coming to UNLV. And they will enroll now starting this fall. And I got to tell you, when I see the first one of them in the student union ordering from, the sushi bar at the student union, I'm going to get choked up, man. It's going to be awesome. Because, that's why the neighborhoods I grew up in Las Vegas. Yeah. And I think, this is another one of those things you and I talk about where, who would imagine a generation ago doing something like, talking to kids about gaming? Ooh, that's a little shady. That's a little, But obviously gaming is so much more now than a previous generation imagined. And being able to show the next generation of kids, this is what this industry is now. They get a back of the house tour of the Ka Theater, where the guys who invented that crazy stage that like goes out into the audience and there's two stages and they float around and, they talk to them about inventions and about creating an entertainment spectacle. Mm-hmm. Obviously you've written about this, but the industry is so much more than it used to be. And those stories are inspiring to a next generation that, typically doesn't always think about this as a career path. So as we expand our reach, that was something where we thought, gosh, what if we could bring this to a group of kids who really could benefit from it, who really could use this. And it's been just, talk about, you get choked up at the final dinner of that as well, because these students are just, it's amazing what they can do. And it's amazing what they're now doing as they graduate and grow up out of this program.
Great. Well, that's a great program, and I think that would be close to the heart of the guy who helped you form this this organization here, Shannon Bybee.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah,
this is the 25th anniversary of the International Gaming Institute, which is his brainchild.
It was. And,
he talked about somebody who was inspirational, just like Dr. Eddington. I used to work with Shannon in Atlantic City, at the Golden Nugget, and even when you were working for him, he was inspirational. So what does it feel like now after 25 years, and you're getting into all these different things, and it seems like the sky is still the limit for IGI.
I hope so, and I do think about that sort of stuff. This is the time of year you typically do, right? It's the end of a calendar year, and you think back and think, gosh, the stuff that's happened in the last 12 months is anything. Shannon Bybee was like, just as with you, Shannon Bybee hired my dad and used to bounce me off his knee at UNLV Rebel basketball games and was another person who just always would ask me, a little kid, how you doing questions. But as I grew up and came to appreciate who he was and then came to work alongside him professionally, he was somebody who, when he passed, I said, I don't know that you could point to too many people who were pioneers in more completely different areas of gaming than him, right?
Yeah, sure.
Somebody who literally wrote half the regulations, who was Steve Wynn's white hat, was one of the phrases we used to use with him in Atlantic City, because he would always come in, and he just had this great level of leadership, integrity that just exuded from every pore of him. He obviously was one of the first gaming executives to start to talk about problem gambling in a very straightforward way.
That's right.
And was a founder of the Nevada Council on Problem Gambling, which was something that when that was founded, I remember thinking, gosh, that would not have existed in my grandpa's day. I can't believe we have a Nevada Council on Problem Gambling. He founded that. And then he founded this building, which is another one of those crazy ideas. Who would have thought there would be a school with an institute, right? The institutes are for they're cancer institutes, right? Exactly. That's what those are for. And you know,
he raised the money to get this.
He raised the money to get it built. There was a wonderful legislative participation. This is one of those moments where the Nevada legislature got it. The rumor, I don't know if you heard this from your neck of the woods, but was that Princeton was thinking very seriously about building an institute in, of course, New Jersey. And that really lit a fire, as we've heard these stories now on our 25th anniversary celebrations, under the then president, Robert Maxon, because once he heard Princeton was thinking about it, UNLV's got to have one of these, and then we'll do it. It took a lot of leaders. We've got great photos now out in the hallways of the groundbreaking and the building we're sitting in, you and I, right now. And it's really special to me. There are a whole lot of special people that have occupied these hallways over 25 years. But it's just been a great place to work, to show up for me for, you know, going on almost, 15 years here in this building. And in particular, right, Shannon was just down the hall, and I spent a million hours in there. He was my advisor on my dissertation, advisor on my master's thesis, and he was the one that I chose classes with every semester here, because, you know, we'd find good gaming classes on campus, which wasn't always easy back in the day, and now we have a lot more. So anyways, it's a really special thing on a biographical level for someone like me. And I would hope, and I think if you asked anybody who works in this building, you know, they would agree. You know, there's something about that voice that continues to permeate all that we do. One of the beautiful things about Shannon Bybee, I said this at the law school a couple months ago, because, of course, Shannon was a pioneer at the gaming law program at UNLV, too. Shannon was one of those people who was deeply good at what he did. I mean, no, I don't know that anybody was better at his job. He was really good at what he did. But just as importantly, and probably more importantly in the end, he was really good as a person, right? So we've talked about here at the Gaming Institute, we want to hire people who are really good. We want to hire people who are really good. People who are good in their heart, right? Just nice, good people who are really, really good at their job. We want to stay in that quadrant of really good and really nice. And that kind of generosity that people like Shannon Bybee, that people like Bob Fess, who you and I were talking before we got on and started recording, that spirit, that goes a long way in leadership.
And it makes it a very comfortable experience.
Yes. And it's most important, I think, in gaming, because people don't expect that, right? Mm-hmm. When Shannon would walk into a new jurisdiction, when Bob Fess would go into a place where they had the pitchforks out, and then that kind man walks in, people walk out of there saying, I didn't know that was gaming.
Right.
And I came to think, and I again talked about this before we started recording, but Bob Fess was really good at that too, where there was a kindness that came out that made people say, gosh, I didn't know that was gaming. Right. I like him.
I like that
kindness. Right. And so I think maybe more even than other industries, because of often the sort of baseball metaphor, you know, we start with two strikes sometimes in gaming. Yeah. And when you come at it that way, it has a way of defanging your critics, of making them, you know, put the pitchforks away.
Right. Well, Bo, congratulations on holding up the traditions of Shannon Bybee and Bill Eddington and keeping this program going forward. And we have to talk more often, because it's been too many years.
Lots happened.
So, So let's do that
anytime.
And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
If you enjoyed this edition of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series. To learn more about the series, visit unlvghes.com, where you can learn about the episodes planned in 2019, including the full-day session on February 21st, The Road to 2020. To learn more about the programs at the UNLV International Gaming Institute, visit unlv.edu/IGI. For the trends and developments in the gaming industry, go to ggbmagazine.com. To read more about all the news in the gaming industry each week, subscribe to GGB News at ggbnews.com. And to attract more players to your iGaming or sports betting websites, visit iGamingPlayer.com. We'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast.